At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Now, this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey! We'll do it twice because it sounds nice. Whether you caught the first one or the second one, catch this one. We're going to be here for the next 3 hours. Tyler Scott flipping the dials when he has time. Pat Creighton sitting next to me. Nick's got the day off. So we're going to continue to fly through all the different things happening in the world of sports as it pertains to, of course, the people here in Houston, Texas. That means the Astros in a series that lost 2 out of 3, but still hit the ball fairly well and still don't have a whole lot to bitch about as they have the day off today and get ready to go to L.A. Rockets coming off the draft. Big night tonight as you can start talking to potential free agents and discuss sign-in trades and then full-blown free agency tomorrow. So that is going to be a big deal. At some point, Kelly Eco, the beat writer for The Athletic that covers your Houston Rockets, is going to talk the draft that was and free agency that is as we get into that. And, of course, the Texans and camp. And, oh, by the way, I have a little audio, Patrick, of a certain massage therapist that worked on Deshaun. And I guess she covers the nooks and cracks, maybe the back door of the matter.
She got deep into it.
Kinda. Yeah, sorta. So there's all that and more. And for the second straight day, my good friend Patrick Creighton and I are going to carry you for the next 3 hours talking about all that and, of course, some other stuff along the way. PC, how was the weekend?
Weekend was good, brother. You know what I mean? Look, we started the weekend off out at Carbox, so you knew it was going to be a pretty good weekend.
Right.
You know, would have appreciated a few more Astros victories, but we got some good baseball. And, you know, when you go out on the West Coast, you figure, all right, we're going to get a 500 trip if you get mm-hmm. a West Coast swing like that. Well, split with the Dodgers here will be a 500 trip. So that'll get them back home and hopefully back healthy, although health seems to be a little bit of an issue for the Astros again.
Yeah.
And Alex Bregman did not make it through his last rehab appearance. He was taken out after 3 innings with some hamstring discomfort. It is the same hamstring that he had issues with last season.
The other leg from the current injury, but yes, the same hamstring as last season. So more concerned or less concerned?
More concerned because, and I'm sure, look, you probably can speak to this as well. Hamstrings never freaking heal. No matter, like, when you have a real hammy injury, like, I coach is telling me, all right, after you feel like you're 100%, it's 2 more weeks. And then maybe you're 100%, and you'll feel like you're good, and then you'll go to stretch it, and then you'll pop it worse, and then it's another 4 weeks. It's one of those injuries that just nag the hell out of you. It doesn't go away. And
it's also a mental thing.
Considering that we're now to August, and we're talking about a hamstring injury, we hope it's a minor thing, and it was more of a tweak than a real pull. You know, you hope it's not real high up the leg. You know, higher up the leg, worse it is. So we hope that, you know, Alex is going to get back on the field before, at this point, be up with the Astros before September at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, they've got Aledmys Diaz back, and he's certainly capable of holding down the third base spot for now. Good stick. You know, he's a pretty good fielder. He's a solid professional bat. He's got power, especially when you're talking about the short left field porch at Minute Maid Park. But Alex Bregman obviously is that's a MVP caliber type bat that they really haven't had in the lineup for a long time because first a quad injury and now a hamstring injury, and it could be a bit.
It's a bit of a concern, obviously. The pitching staff held up for the most part, but they played a San Francisco Giants team that's quietly continued to have the best record in baseball. Chris Bryant joining the Cubs brigade of ex-Cubs on their first game hitting home runs. as he joins Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo to do the damage. He was part of that early barrage for the Giants. And look, Luis Garcia didn't look like Luis Garcia in terms of the control, the accuracy. It wasn't an inconsistent strike zone at times. But, you know, enough to say that he didn't have his best stuff. They were still in the ballgame. The thing that bothered me was late in the game. It wasn't the pitching. It was the hitting. It was the fact that twice in successive innings, you had the first two guys on with nobody out and just found a way to completely execute your way into not scoring a run the first time and scoring one run the second time. The bunt that was laid down by the machete was just a pop-up, and Aledmys Diaz didn't look like he had all that much intensity trying to get to third base. And so instead of advancing and having second and third and one out, you had first and second and gave the Giants an out. And I thought those were things that concerned me more than anything else, the way that team played over the course of the weekend.
Well, their ability to execute small ball has been something that, look, this is last year and now this year, their ability to execute small ball is often suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is kind of the side effect of analytics, right? Which all about home runs and doubles and OPS and on base, but not about bunting or stealing or taking the extra base, devaluing all that stuff. This is where, you know, the Astros are kind of hurt by that, because this team just, they don't execute small ball well. They don't always run the bases overly intelligently. And there's a lot of things that just don't always, there's a lot of things that make you pull your damn hair out when you're in a close game.
But let's also be honest in the fact that they don't really look all that much to play small ball. Dusty's not that kind of guy. And with this lineup, they almost feel like it's insulting if they ask one of their top six to bunt the ball, when in fact it can be the most advantageous move that they could make, because they're so prolific offensively, scoring runs and otherwise. But there are times that it's the right move to make, and yet they seem to be reluctant to do it.
I don't know if I'd say Dusty's not that kind of guy, but I do think that the Astros organization is not that kind of organization. Mm-hmm. And between that and, you know, one of the things that we've talked about all year long is watching innings limits on all these young pitchers who are all likely to hit career highs in innings. And as Luis Garcia creeps in on career high in innings, his last two starts have not been good. He's still getting the strikeouts, but he's given up more hits. He's given up three homers over his last nine and a third, and a total of 10 earned runs. He's found himself in trouble and unable to get out of it. And you wonder, you know, part of this could be, all right, he's been through the league a couple of times. Maybe there's a book on him now, and teams are starting to catch up to him, and he's got to adjust. The other part of it is, maybe he's getting a little fatigued, because I think his career high in innings is like 103.
Yeah, he hit it. Yeah.
And, you know, now we're at it. So he's at 102/3 innings. He's right up against his career high. He might be feeling a little fatigued.
Yeah. So those are the things you got to be concerned with. They keep saying Urquidy's coming back. You can't count on him. It's the second time, like we talked about on Friday, on the DL with the exact same injury. So that's not something that you can expect is going to turn to have big dividends for you. But at some point, I believe Garcia is the guy that ends up being the next to go to the bullpen, because as effective as he was as a starter, he's not as effective as he's been. And therefore, with guys coming back and other opportunities to do things a different way, and of course, as you get to the playoffs and you shorten your rotation even more, he seems to be next in line to head to relief appearances. Would you agree with that?
Well, they've got to find a way to mitigate his innings. And you can't have him hit October having thrown 150, 160 innings. I don't know if like me, you subscribe to the rule of 50, which is the old Oakland A's, Atlanta Braves theory of when you have a pitcher who goes 50 innings higher than his career high, that pitcher the following year is extremely susceptible to both injury and diminished performance. And really, outside of Odorizzi and Greinke, everybody who potentially starts for this team has an innings cap that has to be watched. McCullers has been maybe the best of the bunch, but his career high is 120. So you don't want McCullers going into October having thrown 175 innings.
Okay. I get what you're saying, Pat, but I'm going to push back a little bit because you know what? If it's going to happen, it's going to happen regardless. And I know that, you know, we see the same kind of theory when it comes to a no-hitter, when you throw too many pitches, that, you know what, if you're the team that says, we're going to go get that for you, we're going to let you keep going, and whether you get it or not. Santana was the perfect example with the Mets.
Well, essentially ended his career.
Right, ended his career, right? But okay, but then you got Corey Kluber with the Yankees this year as your next, or the kid from the Orioles, the same thing, and it ends up being... Or the kid from the Tigers. It ends up being an issue. The other thing that I always go back to is the other two guys that were big on innings counts and being super cautious. That would be Jabba Chamberlain, and that would be Steven Strasburg. Both guys who, in the year that the Nats had a legit chance to win it all, Strasburg, the plug was pulled and said, no, we're not risking your long-term future. We're pulling the plug. And, oh, by the way, he still had Tommy John. And the same thing could be said of Jabba Chamberlain with the Yankees. We're not going to push the envelope.
He's also out for the season this year now, too.
And Strasburg's out this year again with a different injury, a neck injury.
But keep in mind, the reason Strasburg had that innings limit was because he was coming off Tommy John surgery.
But he had it again anyway.
He had it the year before. He had surgery at Tommy John the year before. When he came back, he was pitching very well. They had an innings cap on him, and Scott Boras was very adamant about that innings limit, and then they shut him down, and they didn't advance in the playoffs. They got in, but they didn't advance because the Matt Harvey is the opposite story. Harvey came back off Tommy John, and the Mets pitched him more innings than anybody has ever pitched coming back from Tommy John in MLB history, and it destroyed his arm. He went out there, and he pitched like a champ. They went to the World Series. They didn't win. And the following year, he couldn't pitch. And Matt Harvey is still bouncing around with, an 8 ERA in Baltimore. And the Mets ruined his career. Those innings caps and managing your pitcher's arms, you know, I don't understand a lot of people go, well, back in the day, this. Well, we're not back in the day. We're here and now. And the here and now is if you just throw these guys out there wantonly, you can blow their arms out.
I'm not saying go ridiculously over the top, but the same thing. Jabba Chamberlain didn't have the surgery previous. Jabba Chamberlain was the golden child. Jabba Chamberlain was a guy we had to watch all the innings for, and lo and behold, he did it anyway. No matter how much they watched the innings, and at a certain point, you could still manage it to some degree, but you have to go with what you have and know that the windows only for these opportunities are only open so many times, and especially with how important it is for the Astros this year and the fact that they didn't go out and get a starter.
But isn't that the bigger issue?
It can be, but I'm still never going to fault James Click because he did enough for this team to do something I didn't think was possible, which was not give up prospects or go over the cap and still find a way to retool his bullpen.
They did a terrific job with that, but the starting pitching depth was always going to be an issue, and right now they're going to find themselves in the soup trying to get out of it.
Well, there you go. We're just getting it going. First segment of the show in the books. Plenty more to get to as we roll on up until 4 o'clock. Having some fun, talking some sports, doing some things, and you're always a part of it. HR&P Listener Line, 713-780-3776 if you want to call or text. If you text, put your name on it so we can talk directly to you. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch, hit us up on Twitter, as we are the Press Box, and this is ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, back, talking some baseball to open the show. Patrick Creighton for Nick, Tyler Scott for Nick, and me, as we go till 4 o'clock, talking about a whole lot of things as it relates to Houston sports and, of course, other things if it comes up along the way. Look, the Astros, I get it. They're 3-3 on the six-game trip. They won the series against Seattle. They lost the series against the Giants. Giants are on a home run tear right now. They're a better-than-advertised team that no one's giving a lot of credit to for having the best record in the game or really paying enough attention to, as even Vegas is crapping all over them, saying of the teams that should represent the National League in the World Series, they have a worse percentage possibility and odds than that of the two teams in their own division, the Padres and the Dodgers. Yet Fernando Tatis Jr. is on the IL, and there's a chance if this shoulder doesn't feel better in a couple of days, he's facing season-ending surgery.
So that could be a big monkey wrench in another go-for-it round for the Padres. Dodgers, obviously, as the Astros will see front and center, reloaded yet again, used money to fix the other problems that they had going. And now the Astros will see Max Scherzer on Wednesday. They will see Trey Turner at second base for the series, I would imagine, from the opening of the series on Tuesday, as Mookie Betts came back off the IL and went back to his roots and played second base for them yesterday, made a hell of a play early on over his shoulder to catch a ball, turned a double play, hit a home run, did what they need to do. Dodgers, you thought were going to have real issues with Bauer out, with Kershaw on the IL, but yet here they come again. They make that the move that no one thought they could make at the deadline. They get not one but two above average players that are going to do anything but help get them the momentum they need to get back into this pennant chase. And yet here come the Astros to take them on and see where they stack up now against the Dodgers. I'm not mad about the way they played the Giants, the Astros. I'm not mad about the fact that they were still hitting the baseball. I was a little concerned with Michael Brantley because I want that to be less than a sprain or a strain. And just he obviously popped the bag funny in beating out that that hit in the first inning. But you can't, especially with the news on Bregman, you can't have him miss any more significant time. The time to miss time is behind us. We need to start getting to see this team getting tuned up for a playoff run, for maintaining the best record in the American League, for doing everything they need to do to solidify their position and then go forward 100% full speed ahead. The Bregman thing's got me more than a bit concerned about the 100% part. And the last thing you can afford to do is also lose Brantley.
And what were we just talking about on Friday? About, you know, hey, the only way we're going to see Yordan is probably if they need to give Brantley a day off. And, well, giving him a day off would have been far preferable to, well, we don't know how long Brantley may or may not be out. I mean, Brantley's at 331 this year. Mm-hmm. And, no, he hasn't hit for a ton of homers, but he's got 26 doubles. And, you know, his OPS is 862. So it's not like he's a 331 singles hitter. He just hasn't hit the same number of homers, but he's been a terrific bat. He gets on base. He gets extra base hits. He's got 109 hits. So he's been a really good bat for them this year. And he balances the lineup by having that extra lefty bat in there. And with Regs being out to lose Brantley, like, this has been the bugaboo with the Astros all year long. They can never get the whole lineup on the field.
Right, and yet they are where they are.
And here we are, top of the American
League. Right, which says something. So it's not like there's a panic button being pushed, but at a certain point we said how vitally important it is to win it all this year, to shut everybody up, to send the message of all messages that we're just tired of it, put it in your rearview mirror and go forward along with us because you're not going to be us, you're not going to join us. So just allow everybody to realize that if it's earned this year, tip your cap, and say they're just a damn good baseball team. That's why you want everybody all hands on deck, ready to go, make the push, may the best team win. That's what makes me nervous. Because from a starting pitching perspective, look, Greinke didn't look good either. That's the first time he gave up four bombs in quite a while, but four bombs for a guy that's not a power pitcher means that his breaking stuff wasn't breaking, his control wasn't pinpoint, and he had issues. You can't have that happen as well, because now we already know that Garcia struggled. And no matter how much we said they had a surplus of good starting pitching, at a certain point, you're going to need three or four really, really good arms come playoff time. And that's starting to make me nervous a little bit now, too, as I look at everything, because of the fact that Garcia joins Fromber in the fact that their control wasn't great. Greinke had another Greinke. He doesn't have him often, but when it's not a hiccup, it's a full-blown regurgitation when he decides to cough him up. So that's a concern, and injuries are a concern. The bullpen was great. Even a guy that everybody wrote off and thought he wasn't even going to be a part of the process in Montero comes in and looks fairly good.
No, he gave him inning and a third. Yep. He gave him a solid, didn't give any runs. I don't think he gave him a hit. He came in and he pitched well in middle relief, and that's what they needed him to do. It's almost like, I almost feel like we're kind of looking at the Astros the same way we're looking at the Brooklyn Nets of, all right, we're probably going to win the division. And after these two games in L.A., the schedule is going to be pretty soft. Mm-hmm. You're going to come home for six games against the Twins and the Rockies, and they both stink.
Right.
Then you go out to play the Angels, who, look, they're not very good. You go to Kansas City, they stink. You come home, you get Seattle, but then you get Kansas City again. Then you have the Junk Grabbers in Seattle. So for the next month, the schedule is kind of soft. Can you maintain your lead and get your team healthy?
Well, you have to, right? You have to do what you haven't been able to do all season, which is beat down on the sub 500 teams. You're great about playing to the level of the competition for 500 and above, but all season long, it's been an issue.
This is where, you know, they've got to figure out a way to win games against the lesser competition, but win games while trying to get the rest of the team healthy. At this point, to me, it's more about how can we get ourselves set up for October. They're going to play in the playoffs. I don't think there's any question the Astros are going to be in the playoffs. I'm fully confident they're going to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Fully confident they're going to win the division. So I'm not concerned about, oh, they could fall out, they could go on this big losing streak. Like, that's not going to happen. But they've got to get people healthy, because when you get to the postseason, when you don't have your full complement of players, it's amazing how fast pitchers' arms get rubbery in the postseason when they're pitching more than they're used to against better teams who are now going to see them two or three or four times in a week and a half and get a much tighter book on them. So this, to me, is the Astros' biggest issue, is how do you get these guys healthy? And to your point earlier about, hey, somebody's got to pitch.
Right.
And this was one of the things we talked about last year when Verlander went down, of, hey, this is the one positive about Verlander going down. You got to fill 12 starts and not 33.
Right.
Well, this year you've got to fill 33 starts. And, you know, is Javier going to wind up bouncing back to the rotation? Because it seems like they don't want to bounce him back to the rotation.
I would agree with that.
There's and between Urquidy, who's, you know, on second time with the same shoulder, Valdez, who's got a little Steve Blass syndrome going on right now, Garcia, who looks like he's hitting a little bit of a wall. Hopefully it's something he'll be able to pitch through in a game or two and get right back to be, because he's been a revelation for them.
But you know what, Pat? So has Urquidy. Aside from the shoulder issues, I don't know that there's many pitchers on that staff that I have more confidence than Urquidy when he's on the mound to have his stuff, and he proved it in the postseason last year and down the stretch. So I want him to be out there. It's just like you said on Friday. The fact that this is the second time with the exact same injury does not bode well for a guy that, well, from now on the rest of the season he's going to stay healthy. So you've got all these different concerns. Of course, everybody's going to the spider tack saying, well, that's Fromber's issue. I don't know if it is or not. He's had issues between his ears in the past. Being able to mentally stay focused, he had a psychologist work with him, and all of a sudden it was a revelation when he wasn't walking guys anymore. But Garcia looked similar. Whether you think it's maybe that he's gassed and he's reached his innings limit, whatever the case may be, he's not what he's been, which has been, as you mentioned, a revelation. And the thing with Javier is it's either put up or shut up time. And if you're going to put him up there, then you have to make a decision. Well, you need to know exactly where these other starters are going to be and realize I need him as a starter again. Or he needs, as I mentioned Friday, he needs to figure out how to get ready sooner, and the fact that if he comes into a game and pitches, that they can't be without him for the next 3 to 4 days. He's got to bounce back quicker.
And that's part of the issue with them bouncing him back and forth. Mm-hmm. He's been a starter his entire minor league career. Comes up, okay, you're going to pitch out of the pen. Okay, now you're going to start. Okay, now you're going to pitch out of the pen. Okay, now you're going to start. You know, all right, so we're going to stretch you out in spring training. You're going to start. All right, we signed Jake Odorizzi. Back to the pen you go. All right, you know what? We need you to start again because we got a bunch of injuries. Okay, now back to the pen you go. When you keep messing with the guy back and forth like that,
sure,
it's hard to keep him stretched out. And that's kind of one of the issues. Like, when you're a starting pitcher, your routine is different. How you get ready is different. Relievers are rubber arm guys. They get up. They pitch 3 out of 4 days, 5 out of 7 days. Starter's not used to that. It's a different tax on their arm. So, you know, this is part of the reason why they have that issue with when they go to Javier. They try to get him for 2 innings because they know, all right, the next day we probably can't go to him.
Right. All right, well, we'll continue to roll on. You guys want to comment on the Astros, bring it to us. 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, Twitch and Twitter as we're checking all throughout the program. We've got some other things to get to, baseball-wise and otherwise. Also got some NFL news to cover. And, of course, we've got your Houston Rockets. Kelly Eco of The Athletic, the beat writer for the Rockets, is going to get back from the draft and get with us for a segment or two today as we kick around what happened in the draft, and free agency starts tomorrow. You can start talking tonight. And, oh, Pat, you know they're already talking. So we can have plenty to talk about as it relates to your Houston Rockets and the reset button that's already been pressed. Lots more to get to. It's the Press Box on a Monday, ESPN.
Fan. 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, Nick is out today. Pat back in. It is Tyler, Pat, and myself as we handle the Press Box duties till 4 o'clock, taking you into the Blitz. Having a good time. Always a great time working with my good friend Pat Creighton as we kick it around. You guys seem to be liking it as well as we talk a lot of sports and other things. Look, one other note on the Astros front. It doesn't exactly make me giddy, as not Santa will tell you. It does make some people somewhat excited because yet it's another arm that could be accessible, Patrick, down the stretch. But Josh James activated from the IL, optioned to Sugar Land, where he was already rehabbing. Because he was on the 60-day IL, the Astros needed to clear a 40-man roster spot. They DFA'd Ralph Garza, which we both expected was probably going to be the guy that is the odd man out. He's expected to be exposed to waivers shortly. I don't think anybody loses any sleep over that. I lose sleep if Josh James comes into a high-leverage situation because I have bad memories of Josh James. But look, he may be better than some of the guys that you still have on the active roster. We shall see. I would have been more giddy if that was Pedro Baez that was getting closer to being activated to the big league roster.
Tell you the truth, I don't think they need Josh James to be a high leverage guy. They just need him to give middle innings and maybe some long relief and maybe a spot start, depending on how stretched out he is, how far they can get him. But they don't need him to be a high leverage
guy.
Can
I shut you off right there? They don't need him. You could stop right there. Don't need him. High leverage, low leverage, he creates high leverage because he can't control his stuff.
I'm not necessarily opposed to that point of view because I've held it many times myself. In a year where they can't keep anybody freaking healthy, especially in the bullpen, if Josh James can come in and pitch a fifth, sixth inning for you here and there and eat up some innings in that middle relief, kind of like Rafael Montero did yesterday. Right. That's exactly the kind of role I'm fine with that for Josh James. Look, nobody has a lockdown underbelly of the bullpen, but you've got to have arms that you can count on to actually take the
And now they do, which is why, see, this is the thing that's amusing to me, because the army of Astros Twitter has come at me several times when I have crapped all over Rayleigh and said, I've seen enough of him. I'm tired of Dusty having him as a security blanket. His ERA, which was in the high nines, then it was in the high eights, then it was in the high sevens, and that's still not good enough to be where it needs to be for a team this good. He had so many defenders. I mean, you'd have thought it was a freaking Tom Thibodeau defensive strategy somewhere in the NBA playoffs. I mean, there was defenders coming out of the woodwork, and they're going, ERA is not an accurate way to give me analysis on a relief pitcher. I don't care what an analytical approach you look at. Rayleigh's not a guy that should be a go-to on a playoff caliber, let alone World Series caliber team. And he could go too, because now, to your point, Patrick, what they haven't had in the past that they now have, thanks to James Click at the trade deadline, is a surplus of guys that you can have some trust, if you're Dusty Baker, in going to, knowing they're going to get guys out.
If you're going to go with the, well, ERA isn't the best judger of quality. And look, ERA matters, okay?
Yep.
But if you want to get to what are other, like, analytic. All right, there's WHIP and walks and hits per innings pitched, and Brooks Raley's is very high. There's hits per nine innings, and Brooks Raley's isn't good. There's strikeout to walk ratio, and is okay, but there's still a lot of walks. He's not a young guy. He's 33 years old. He is who he is, and he's never been a guy who stuck around for very long, whether it was the Cubs, whether it was the Reds, and now whether it's here with the Astros.
Whether it was – where was he, Japan or China? I mean, that's where they got him from.
There's a reason why he hasn't stuck around in the majors that long. He's just not that good. And, yes, he's a left-handed pitcher, and, you know, you've got the idea of you have to have some lefties in the pen. We've seen another analytical approach. they will look at right-handers who are equally effective against righties and lefties and say, okay, I don't need a lefty because I've got righties who can get lefties
out. Was that 2 years ago they didn't have one?
Yeah, it was 2018 or 2019, the same exact story. The Astros actually had that point of view. So I would rather have the righty come in and be equally effective than have a guy who's left-handed, and as soon as he faces a right-handed batter, we're dousing the field of gasoline because he can't get him out.
Look, the list for me, I don't need to see Raley. I don't need to see Belak. Taylor, to me, is hit and miss. And if you need a lefty, that I would actually have him out there before I would have Raley back out there. But because of what they've been able to do, because of the amount of quality arms they've been able to add, because you essentially added three closers to a team that already had Ryan Pressly, you now have a night and day better bullpen. So therefore, I can whittle that down. I can pick and choose, but I can find guys and be a little bit pickier now than I have than in the past when I've said, hey, any available arm that has pitched relief in the major leagues before or close to it, I need to see you in Dusty's office. Now you don't have to have that kind of open door policy. Now you can be more finicky and picky in terms of who you pick to pitch when you decide, and you're going to have a better chance of getting guys out. So that's why I don't need to see those other guys.
And look, the big deal is getting Baez back. Because that's a proven reliever, you know, setup guy who has pitched on big teams and knows how to get outs. Then you have Pressly and Graveman and Garcia and Matos and you've got Javier.
You can go to Montero.
Baez. You now have five guys in your pen that you know can get you out.
Yes. Yep.
So that leaves you, your Josh James and your Monteros and whatnot. You only need two of those guys.
Belak and
you,
all
you only
those
need
guys.
Two of those guys.
Brian Abreu. I mean, again, maybe someday down the road he turns into the electric stuff, major league arm, great potential guy that they're hoping for. But I'm done with experimentation in the bullpen because this team, as I continue to say, it's too good to have had a bullpen this bad, and now it's too good to keep experimenting, giving guys opportunities when it's crunch time.
And has Abreu not had some Josh James in him? How many times have we seen Abreu get two outs, walks a guy, and then it's boom, 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 and that's it. Now the inning's gotten away, and you got to go fetch him.
We've got some breaking Astros news.
Oh, Tyler, bring it to us.
We have the.
Are you going to play that?
I don't know actually where it is. So
that's just late.
Actually, no, I just found it, and here we go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Done this before?
Maybe. Right. Maybe once or twice. The Astros claimed Jacob Wilson off of waivers from the A's. He's an infielder for the A's. He was, he was designated over the weekend. Righty Tyler Ivey is now being transferred to the 60-day injured list to create 40-man roster space. This is all.
That's not what I was expecting to hear about.
Chandler Rome.
Yeah, I believe in Chandler Rome, so I'll take that as completely accurate. That's not what I was hoping for. I mean, what is this? Does he replace Robel Garcia? And maybe Probably. He hits a little bit better?
He's
I don't know.
He's a 31-year-old, basically career minor leaguer, third baseman, right-hand batter, has a little, and I mean a little, bit of pop.
Better contact than Robel Garcia?
Basically, he's a depth move for them, not knowing what the situation is with Alex Bregman.
That's what concerns me.
This is a depth move for them to make sure that they've got bodies who can play that position.
Yeah, that's what concerns me most. Is this move being made because there's concern now about Bregman and being out another extended period of time, which they don't really need right now. They can get by. Look, and I said this when they were making the move, and I believe it more than ever now. Aledimus is a freaking stick. Aledimus Diaz can play this game. The only issue the Astros have ever had is keeping him healthy. And the fact that he is an upgrade from Marwin Gonzalez in terms of his Swiss Army knife capabilities. But no matter where you put him, he's a stick. And when you put him in the infield, he doesn't give you any reason for concern. He does it all over the field, but he can't do it all by himself. If you've got multiple injuries now, you still are going to have to figure out center field. And look, the other thing is Chaz didn't disappoint you yesterday with a couple of knocks. Chaz has got the speed. Chaz can play center field. I don't want to see Kyle Tucker out there. I just don't. And again, you've got a minor league kid that you're, you know, that you're trying to get acclimated, and you put him in a bad spot yesterday against their closer, and he struck out on three pitches. That's a, again, the time for that kind of stuff is beyond, is past them by. It's now go time, because the Red Sox have scuffled. They got swept by the Rays. Now the Rays are in first place, and now you should be more concerned with the Rays than the Red Sox. But as you scoreboard watch and you realize, as you said, Pat, they're in. They're going to get in, and there's no reason why you shouldn't believe, especially with the schedule, they're going to win the division. But it's more important than that. You want them to have the best record in the American League, so therefore I'm done experimenting.
Now, Wilson, he can play first, second, third, so he's got some positional flexibility. He can fill in like a utility infielder, infielder type of role. Friend of mine, who is now in the heart of Clemson country, had a big big report just came out a little bit ago, and we'll get him on a horn next.
There you go. Got a special guest. It's going to be guest galore as we continue to get you all the information you need. This is pertinent as it relates to a big story that's been brewing for the last week or so. So that comes up next. A whole lot more. Kelly Eco, beat writer for the Rockets, joins us in the 3 o'clock hour. Stay tuned. Much more coming up. It's Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, a longtime friend of mine, guy I used to host a show with in Atlanta back in the day. He is now the APD of our sister station, ESPN Upstate in South Carolina. He's also their afternoon drive host, first place afternoon drive host. Congratulations, my buddy Mark Ryan. Hey, Mark, what's going on, brother?
Patrick Creighton, always great to hear your voice, sir. Congratulations on all your success in Houston.
I appreciate it, my friend. You, sir, dropped some big bomb on Twitter not too long ago. You know, we've been talking about the idea of the SEC and a super conference and, you know, pilfering the Big 12 out of the only two teams worth anything in that conference. But, you know, it became, all right, well, who's going to be next? The Pac-12, the ACC, and you had a big story today, Clemson and Florida State reaching out to the SEC. Brother, tell us what you know.
So I had a very insightful conversation today with a source that's about as reliable as they come, Patrick. The source told me the following: Clemson and Florida State have reached out to the SEC about joining the conference. I was also told that the SEC reaches out to nobody about joining the conference themselves. Texas and Oklahoma reached out to the SEC over a year ago, as has been reported by some, and the SEC did its own research on whether they wanted to add them. You know, of course, it was kind of a dumb charade, Patrick, this whole thing. Oh, what are they going to vote, when we all knew they had already voted yes to Oklahoma and Texas at least 6 months ago, right? But we are now getting reports that Clemson and Florida State have reached out to the SEC about joining the conference. And the SEC has some concerns because their belief is that Clemson and Florida State don't bring the streaming numbers that Oklahoma and Texas do. The source went on to tell me that Notre Dame is the only quote-unquote free agent remaining that would add to the pot, and that Clemson and Florida State, what they would bring, you know, adding two more teams and then splitting the pot among 18 different teams, would not increase revenue per team, would not increase revenue significantly per conference. And so if Notre Dame ever wants to go to a conference, they know their fit, right? They know where they go. But Notre Dame has the long-term deal with NBC that would have to be broken. And so the source that I spoke to, Patrick, believes that SEC expansion is now done. He believes it's done because he says Notre Dame is the only one that moves the proverbial needle.
And this is with Clemson being, for the last several years, the rival to Alabama as far as talent and championships, and they don't feel like Clemson moves the needle. That's wild to me.
You know, it's interesting because when you think about the teams, Patrick, that would benefit the most from name, image, and likeness,
Clemson, South Carolina. Did you even know, Patrick, that Clemson is a town? Until I moved here, I thought Clemson was the school. I didn't think it was actually a town. Clemson, South Carolina is essentially the same as Gainesville, Florida. It's a farm town in the middle of nowhere where they've built kind of a Willy Wonka's chocolate factory where they're, protected from anything that goes on the outside. You go there, you realize that you've landed in Shangri-La, you've landed in heaven on earth, but it's isolated from just about everything. So the feeling is that a school like Clemson doesn't benefit as much from name, image, and likeness because you're not in a Los Angeles. You're not a Houston Cougars playing in the city of Houston with all the marketing ability that surrounds you there. But they believe there's crossover in terms of the streaming. There's crossover in terms of the market with the Gamecocks, Florida State, obviously, with the Florida Gators. And as of right now, that is what the SEC feels. To which, Patrick, some of the responses to my tweet said, I'd love to see the streaming numbers for Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. Which is funny, Patrick, but those teams are already grandfathered in, right? Unless the SEC was ever to adopt the English Premier League's promotion and relegation system, there's nothing Vandy and Mississippi State and schools like that can be due to be kicked out. If they're going to expand, though, you better be adding new eyeballs and you better be adding new revenue to the pot. ESPN informed the SEC that their contract with the network would increase significantly, thereby increasing the payout to the remaining 14 teams if Oklahoma and Texas join the conference. Now, why did ESPN do that, Patrick? So they can take Oklahoma and Texas away from Fox. So they all worked this out. This has all been worked out the last 6 to 12 months, what the next contract would look like. The SEC crunched the numbers. The SEC talked to its member institutions. And then they put us all through the whole song and dance last week. We're going to have the vote tomorrow. Boy, I wonder what that vote's going to be, Patrick. You know what I mean? So it wasn't a surprise to anyone that it was unanimous, because it's been unanimous for almost a year now.
And then we're talking with Mark Ryan. He's the afternoon drive host of our sister station, ESPN Upstate. He is right in the heart of Clemson country. And old friend of mine, we worked together doing a morning show in Atlanta, 10 years ago now? So always good to talk with you, buddy. So this is just the SEC actually would turn their nose at Clemson and Florida State. They don't think they bring enough in. So Notre Dame is the only school. No, nobody else would move the needle. Would you think, and I'm asking you to speculate here, I know you were a huge college football guy, would USC move the needle?
Yeah, and then it just goes to the question, at what point are we actually damaging college football by doing this, Patrick, right? I don't like the addition of Oklahoma and Texas, if I'm honest with you. I value traditions and rivalries. These days, they value just the almighty buck, and that's it. At what point, what team could be added that makes you question whether the league can still be called the Southeastern Conference? If Ohio State is added, they're not southeastern portion of the United States, are they? Southern Cal? They're not either. Notre Dame certainly isn't, right? But we have reached a place, and this has been in some ways triggered by name, image, and likeness, where we are seeing a seismic shift. A 12 level on the Richter scale, Patrick, on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of what we're going to see over the next 6 to 12 months as the landscape changes wildly. I'll add it as an aside. This is also why the likes of Dan Mullen at Florida and Dabo Swinney at Clemson have been noncommittal about their futures at their respective schools, because they don't know what college football is going to look like moving forward. And they don't know if they're going to like what college football looks like moving forward. And that's why they're being noncommittal about their futures. Both of them are.
Mark, that's lots of great info here. And I know that you're about to jump onto your show here in about 5 minutes. So I certainly appreciate all the stuff, all the knowledge you just dropped, all the info you just dropped. Mark Ryan, our sister station, ESPN Upstate, at Mark Ryan on air on Twitter. Buddy, we'll talk soon, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much, buddy. Take care. Have a great one.
All right, Mark Ryan, ESPN Upstate, with us here on the Press Box.
I don't get in the middle of love fests. I mean, there was so much love there, Tyler. I was like, nah, I'll just sit here and drink coffee. It's fine. It was good information.
To me, it's wild the SEC would – that Clemson, you're a little beneath us. Florida State.
It's crazy to me, right?
Yeah, you're a little beneath us. We don't quite need you.
I would change, you know, because I already said previously on this show multiple times, and I think we're in the same boat. In growing up, there was the geographic separation for all the conferences. There was something about the passion of Big Ten being Midwest. When you added Penn State and Rutgers and Maryland and you went, no, it doesn't fit. But now, if we just want to rename the SEC, the HAV, because it's going to be the haves and the have-nots. And the haves are just going to be as strong as they can be and be the rich getting richer. And then it's y'all fun for yourself. The have-nots can do whatever they want to do and carry on with their day. But they feel like they've got enough to, as you said, if you get Notre Dame, great. And their contract is massive with NBC, and I don't think they're walking away from that because it's all for them.
No, I think if you brought them in, you'd have to merge that in.
Yeah, and you'd have to see how that works, and then you'd have network-on-network crime and everything else, everybody trying to get their piece of what is going to be the must-see TV in college football. But other than that, I mean, they've created the super conference that they can just dictate the rich getting richer, and if you're not one of us, then you're one of them, and one of them's don't fit with all that we do.
No, this has been the evolution of college football from the days where, you know, the NCAA controlled all the TV contracts and you were only allowed to be on national TV, what, a maximum of twice a year, and then they got sued. And the court ruled, hey, you know what? Schools and conferences can be in control of their own TV contracts. And that's essentially how we got every conference having their own TV network and different schools having their own contracts, to the point where college sports has gotten so big and so rich that we are now at this point where you've got, what, 40 to 50 schools that have the 90% of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have... I mean, we're looking at the SEC forming a super conference, and I've kind of said I think that eventually the SEC and the Big Ten will be the last two standing.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
The other three conferences and what's left of the Big 12, but the other three conferences are going to get cherry-picked, and the best teams are going to move into one of those two schools, and everybody else is just going to be like a G6 or a G7 conference.
Well, and the have and have-nots used to involve conversations about USC and UCLA. You had to. But now, because of the lack of performance on the field...
Oh, their TV contract is hideous.
Yeah, but I mean, still, look, from a team perspective, the only team that I kept... That's what I kept saying to you. The only team that honestly is missing in terms of just from a football powerhouse perspective, the best teams within the conference, is Ohio State. Other than that, I don't see any... And Notre Dame, they've been okay, but look, every time they get into the playoffs, they suck. So I could see Ohio State being the only other school that really would be worth it from a football perspective. Other than that... They got it right.
See, I think, and what we just heard from Mark about Clemson and Florida State about streaming numbers.
Yep.
We're not talking about on the field. We're talking about in the pocket.
Yep.
And that's where your Notre Dame and maybe your USC, certainly your Ohio States, would come in. Is there more expansion coming? He says not with the SEC right now, but that doesn't mean not for the Big Ten. Mark Berman tweeted out some news.
Gosh darn you.
I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay, good.
Because we're going to talk about it next.
There you go. That's a tease. Hour number two starts with big news that we covered from hour number one. And it's good. So we'll continue to do that. Before we do that, I do want to get with you on the good people at Cars for Kids. Look, I've been telling you about them for quite a while. And why wouldn't I? Because it's a phenomenal program. Look, sometimes people have a luxury or maybe they're just lazy. They have a vehicle that's been laying around. It's in your garage. It's in a field in the back. Regardless, you don't want to pay to have it towed away. You don't know what to do with it because you're lazy and or you just don't want an eyesore to turn into a sore in your wallet. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You just get in touch with Cars for Kids and they do the rest. I'm serious. They do all the rest. You can go to carsforkids.org or call 713-225-4226 and get in touch with them. They come to you. They tow it away for free. It's a tax write-off. If you don't have the title for it, it doesn't matter. They'll track it down. And they're doing you even more favors by, if you mention ESPN 97.5, you're also going to get a $50 gift card just to say thank you, because your donation then is going to be turned into resources for kids trying to get a second chance at an education. If these kids failed the first time, why not give them another opportunity? Because we want them to have a future, and their future is now. And the other thing that these cars do is when you donate them, it turns into money for the Houston Can Academies, which provide the actual classrooms and the facilities to get these kids to where they need to go. It's a phenomenal program. It all starts with your donation. So please think about it. Maybe it's a relative. Maybe it's someone you know, and you know that they have a vehicle that's just been sitting around. It may not even be working. Boat, car, trailer, you name it, car, a motorcycle. It doesn't matter. Donate it today and find out how that donation can actually do such a big world of good for kids in this area. Check them out. Donate the car, because I'm telling you what, you'll be glad you did. You reap the benefits. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to this. You write off the car, not the kid.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.